Our campaign is the only campaign that has beaten Donald Trump and that can beat Donald Trump on Super Tuesday.
He's always calling me Little Marco. And I'll admit, the guy, he's taller than me. He's like 6'2", which is why I don't understand why his hands are the size of someone who's 5'2". Have you seen his hands?
We need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. We need to support leaders around the world who do not speak for the big polluters of the big corporations, but who speak for all of humanity.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and it's Monday. It's February 29th, 2016. That's right, 29. I said 29. Don't double-check your calendar. It is a leap day today, so we have 29 days this February. And happy birthday, by the way. If it's your birthday today, you haven't had one in, what, 5 years, 7 years? I'm not sure what the leap year number is, but I know you only get a birthday every once in a while, so it should be a special day for you if it's your birthday. Nothing else is different today. It's a normal Monday, and as you heard Vic say, we have snow on the way, but there is a little bit of bright spot this morning in the business world. The markets are not tanking anywhere in the world this morning. They're actually holding their own generally across the globe, around the globe. In Asia overnight is the worst of all of them. The Hang Seng is off about 252 points, which is about 1.5%. The Shanghai is off as well. Dow futures are pointing toward an open that'll be lower later on Wall Street. So here's your intel this morning, your market intel for the day. The Asian markets, you heard there, finance ministers and central bankers from the group of 20 rich and developing countries have promised at their meeting over the weekend that they're going to use all of the tools at their disposal, whatever that means, to bolster weak global growth. They were not specific. And that's what's causing a little bit of the market's anxiety this morning. They also vowed not to devalue their currencies. And this morning, investor sentiment also cautious ahead of the release of a slew of economic data this week. Major U.S. benchmarks finished a strong week, but on a flat note, the Dow Industrials Friday down about 0.3%, 57 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 lost about 3.65 points, or about 0.2%. The NASDAQ was off just about 0.2% as well. The dollar fell against the yen and the euro. Crude oil at $33 a barrel this week. Have a couple of major reports. First today, the National Association of Realtors releases its pending home sales for January. For tomorrow, the Commerce Department is going to report on January construction spending, and the Institute for Supply Management will release its manufacturing index for February. Also, automakers report vehicle sales for February. We'll see if their good year last year is continuing into this year. And the Federal Reserve releases its beige book on Wednesday. So a very busy week. Lots of things that could drive the market. We're going to be talking during our show today about the Oscars. Last night, a big Oscar telecast. Many of you probably stayed up to watch it. A couple of the ads that ran during the show I thought were funnier than the Super Bowl. We're going to be talking with Dale Buss about that coming up. We're also going to be talking a little bit later on about the retail end of this, some new advertisements from other places as well. And the future of a favorite retailer is up in question this morning. We'll be talking with Ryan Burrow about that a little bit later on in the program. But first, we're going to start with Dale Buss, the chief executive brandchannel.com and a contributor to Forbes at Dale D. Buss on Twitter. Good morning, Dale. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Welcome back to the broadcast. Did you stay up and watch the Oscars last night?
I have to confess I didn't. Watched a lot of the ads in advance. I know who won. Mm-hmm. I know that Leonardo finally got his Oscar, but I didn't watch the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into a little bit of that a little bit later on. I know you're going to stay with us for much of the broadcast today, but I want to talk to you first about a Walmart this morning. Believe it or not, Walmart is having problems. I thought I'd never say that ever on a broadcast. They've had some disappointing sales figures and earnings figures. And last week, Walmart put into place what it called one of the biggest single-day private sector pay increases ever. It boosted the wages for about 1.2 million U.S. workers, and that's going to be a two-year, $2.7 billion investment in its labor force. Is that driving its earnings problems, or does Walmart have bigger issues to deal with?
Well, Walmart has much bigger issues to deal with, although the fact that it has had to come through with big wage increases certainly is a factor. Really, the main problem with Walmart is is twofold. One related to its own strategy under CEO Doug McMillon, and another kind of more broadly related to trends in retailing. First of all, you know, strategically, Walmart made a big mistake a few years ago under the previous CEO when they said, you know what, we have made our cake here as a retailer that offers lots of merchandise at low prices, a huge assortment, kind of cluttered aisles, giving people the feeling they're going into, you know, a bazaar every day. What we're going to do is just forget all that. We're going to try and go for a higher income consumer. We're going to declutter the aisles. We're going to talk less about price. Seems like it would be really stupid to do that, but that's what they did. They kind of undercut their own business model a few years ago, and they decided to take this different approach. Well, it didn't work, and within a year or so, they were headed right back toward the Walmart that we all know and love, that was aimed at a lower income consumer with cluttered aisles, focusing on price. But the damage had been done. Walmart had, you know, sort of given up part of that franchise that they'd taken decades to establish, and McMillon has been trying to rectify that for the last couple of years since he's been CEO. But you know, the other problem is Walmart's competing against Amazon and e-tailing in general, and so, you know, Amazon has disrupted every single business in the country, sometimes it seems. And what Walmart has been trying to do is rapidly up their e-commerce game. And, you know, they've realized that's how America wants to shop. So they've been doing things ranging from in-store pickup to, you know, in-store mobile apps and everything else to, you know, try to become as relevant digitally as they have always been under their traditional business model. So those two things, along with some other factors, they've really been putting pressure on Walmart earnings-wise.
We're going to get into a more discussion about some of these issues, specifically the future of Walmart Express stores and whether or not it's the future is bright for the CEO, Doug McMillon, at Walmart. That's coming up. We're talking with Dale Buss, contributor at Forbes and at brandchannel.com on the opening bell. It's 5:15.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors in Asian markets have been searching for direction overnight and finding very little. Major U.S. benchmarks finished flat on Friday. The Dow was off 57 points to 16,639. The S&P 500 was down fractionally, but the NASDAQ composite added about 8.5 points. The housing bust, gone but not forgotten. General Electric has been subpoenaed as part of an industry-wide investigation into subprime lending. Prosecutors are looking at potential violations by GE's mortgage lending business from 2005 to 2007. Citigroup says it's received a subpoena from federal prosecutors over its possible involvement in the FIFA bribery scandal. High-level executives in World Soccer's governing body were busted last year. Several banks are accused of transferring bribe money to those officials. So you'd really like a pay raise? Well, can you throw a football? The NFL's team salary cap for 2016 will be $155.27 million, an increase of nearly $12 million. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:21. We're having a conversation this morning with Dale Buss, the chief executive brandchannel.com writer and Forbes contributor on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. Dale, before the break, we were talking about Walmart and just sort of generally the points at which it is moving forward and having struggles. And I'd like to tear a couple of those apart with you. First of all, okay, is the stubborn sales growth. I mean, Walmart used to enjoy that very strongly. All of the retail sector has been having trouble. Is this something that they're doing? You mentioned they've changed a little bit of their business model, but is there something else at play with that?
Well, definitely a couple of factors. I mean, I mentioned the whole e-commerce thrust. That is a problem for every single bricks-and-mortar retailer, if you think about it. I mean, I think last Christmas, the statistic was there was as much business conducted online as there was in physical stores for the first time in the U.S. So that, and it's no surprise, that's where the whole business has been going. But I think it's probably been going in that direction more quickly than maybe Walmart and some other big retailers really had bargained on. The other factor is really the slow economy. I think I saw a report over the weekend that for the first time, the U.S. experienced under 3% annual economic growth for the 10th year in a row. So American consumers and especially Walmart customers who tend to be lower, you know, to mid income, are feeling especially anxious these days. And so that's something that has affected all retailers and really all economic growth. And then there are other factors specific to Walmart. It's gotten a bad rep, okay, over the last several years.
Yeah, that's
it's always been attacked by progressive activists for one thing or another. Low wages was one for a while, and Walmart was targeted as, you know, sort of environmentally suspect. They have had a problem in terms of the perception of women in their workforce and how they're treated and promoted. So, you know, they're just dealing with a lot, some of their own doing, some not.
And when they announced recently they were closing stores across the country, they really got a lot of bad publicity, and in some cases probably rightly so, where they went into these communities with their Walmart stores and closed down the mom-and-pop stores, and now they're pulling out of those stores and leaving nothing in those communities. And then there's the Buy American campaign that they've been harshly criticized for not doing. How big is the Buy American part of that puzzle, or the part of that equation?
Well, it certainly doesn't help them perception-wise. I mean, the fact is their business model is based hugely on relying on goods that are made in China and other low-wage countries. And this has been a struggle for Walmart and other big-box retailers, you know, for as long as they've been around. Walmart can't do a campaign saying, hey, everything we sell is made in America. And I think, you know, maybe you even see this sentiment manifesting itself in support, say, for Donald Trump. I mean, there's a lot of people in America who are frustrated about the problems with manufacturing and the fact that our manufacturing base has dwindled, and a lot of the blame can be placed right there on Walmart, not only for just buying things from China that are sourced elsewhere, but also the pressure they put on suppliers in terms of prices and, you know, kind of this unremitting push for economically for the low prices that are, after all, key to their business model.
In your story that it appears at chiefexecutive.net, you actually refer to the digital part of this as the digital tsunami. And there are a lot of analysts who say that big box retailers, their days are numbered like the dinosaurs because of all of the e-commerce. Is that the case for Walmart? Will they cease to exist someday as a big box store?
Boy, hard to tell, but I mean, I think Walmart may face continual pressure over the years to not only to improve, but maybe close stores here and there. It's just hard to believe that there isn't going to be some role for big box discounters in the future. And Walmart is huge, and they've got resources, and they've got savvy and expertise. So I wouldn't be concerned about their survival necessarily, but they really need to continue to adapt more quickly. And they need to do better in e-commerce so that they can continue to support the bricks-and-mortar stores.
Are we likely to see more of their stores, including these Walmart Express stores that have popped up in metro areas like Chicago, go away?
Yeah, I think we are. I don't think we've seen the end of closings for Walmart. And urban areas are their toughest environment. That's not where they started. That's not where they have made their money over the years. So it's not surprising to see them have a little bit of difficulty with that. But no, I don't think we've seen the last of Walmart closings.
We're talking with Dale Buss of Forbes magazine, a contributor to Forbes, and you can read his latest article again on Walmart at chiefexecutive.net. And coming up in our next segment, we're going to continue our conversation with Dale. We'll talk a little bit about the Oscars, some of the new ads you may have seen if you watched the show last night. That's all coming up in our next segment here on The Opening Bell. But right now it's 5:27. Let's head over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic, what's in the news this morning?
Morning, Steve. Not a good morning for a lot of Chicagoans who work in the city school system. Those pink slips go out today, and no matter which side of this thing you're on with the Board of Education and the CTU, it's a personal thing to lose your job. So we're going to be talking about that, plus some numbers on expressway shootings.
And I hear some four-letter word starting with an S is back in the forecast.
A little bit. We'll talk about that, too. A little bit. By morning, maybe a little bit. But not much. We can deal with it.
All right. We'll be with you shortly. It's 527. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, a new virtual reality headset from HTC.
Which people probably know best as, you know, the Android phone maker.
Move over Oculus Rift and Samsung Gear VR. Make way for the new HTC Vive headset. Dana Woolman is with the tech blog Engadget.
The tech press that's gotten to test it so far has said it's possibly the best virtual reality headset out there. Just the most immersive, the most stunning to use. So it's gotten a lot of hype so far.
In addition to the headset, the package comes with two wireless controllers with haptic feedback, a front-facing camera, and the ability to send and receive calls and messages. But Wollman says it won't come cheap.
The company just announced it's going to be $799.
But if the starting price alone isn't enough to give you pause,
it's going to be making some mistakes in this first-generation product that it's going to have to correct later on.
HTC will begin shipping the Vive in early April. With Tech Trends, I'm Joan Bennett, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. If you were one of the people that watched the Oscars last night, you probably think, oh, well, it's pretty cool to get an award. The gold statue is all nice and everything. There's a lot of money behind this. And so we are wondering just a couple of things. First of all, winning an Oscar, what does it do to a movie? What does it do to a salary of an actor or an actress? And we found some pretty surprising answers, believe it or not. First of all, let's start with the salary. For a male actor, winning an Oscar can boost a salary anywhere from as much as $4 million or more. For women actresses, for actresses, it's a lot different. They do not see the same bump generally, maybe $400,000, $500,000. This is according to The Independent in London. They did an analysis of salaries. So they also looked at the history and politics of the Academy Awards. An author, a book about that by author Emmanuel Levy. Now, if for winning, nine films collectively earned about $145 million more at the box office after just being nominated for an Oscar in 2014. And for those films that win, the Best Picture, for instance, another $13.8 million more post-Oscar win than just being nominated. And other films, so like low-budget films especially, can earn anywhere from 50 to maybe 70% more than their actual take before being nominated or winning the Oscars. And then there's hosting. The host of the Oscars gets about $30,000, $40,000 by some estimates. That's not bad. And then just attending is pretty profitable. Believe it or not, this year, we're trying to still figure out if it's topped a record this year, but the estimate is that the gift swag bags were worth $232,800. A lot of eyebrows going up today, among them the Internal Revenue Service, which in 2005 and 2006 actually put a clamp on a lot of this and started investigating a lot of the actors and actresses who, and directors and writers and everybody who's in the audience. They kind of put the clamp on it, and those bags kind of toned down a little bit over recent years, but they jumped back up this year. Among some of the things on this list, we're going to tell you what was in these bags, believe it or not. The highest thing was $55,000, and that was a 10-day trip to Israel, all expenses paid, $54,000, a private 15-day walking tour of Japan. Also on this list for about $32,000 was a trip to the Treviso Resort in Lake Como, Italy. There were also trips to the Hotel Victoria in Sorrento, Italy, also to spas. There's also, believe it or not, 740 plastic surgery operations if they want it for about $5,500. These are apparently just like maybe eye lifts or something, very cheap. And then there's lots of spas and cars and all kinds of other stuff, $232,000. Well, last night on the Oscars, there were a number of advertisers who we haven't seen advertise on television in a long time. One of the funniest, I thought, was Kohl's. And the advertisement from Kohl's, let's see if I can play it here for you. I think I might be able to. Let's see if we hear this. Here we go. Okay, well, we don't have that. We're going to bring back in Dale Buss, who is a contributor with Forbes and also one of the writers at Channel.com and chief executive. Dale, Kohl's, I thought was pretty funny last night. They were actually one of the chief sponsors of the show, were they not?
Yeah, for the first time, they took over sponsorship as the official retail partner. The Oscars, JCPenney had done it for years and years, and Kohl's finally took it over this year, and I absolutely agree. I saw the ad ahead of time, or some of the ads ahead of time, and the one where the dad gets the remote and is shocked that family would turn over authority to such an important instrument to him. He immediately launches into Cuba Gooding's acceptance speech for Jerry Maguire from several years ago, and I agree that was pretty hilarious. And the Coles did some interesting stuff too. Streaming, they had Vanessa Bayer of Saturday Night Live hosting a red carpet party and sort of providing interesting commentary online. So they did a good job, I think, with this sponsorship that they had of the Oscars for the first year.
And the Coles thing was a little bit surprising. As a matter of fact, later in this broadcast, we're going to be talking about some of the cuts that Coles is making and some of the changes they're making. It was surprising to see them spending money on this. Was it for you?
Well, they have to do something. I mean, I know you're going to be talking about this more later, but just briefly put, Coles is really having a lot of problems in general with their business model. You know, especially competing against the likes of online retailers, they just haven't gotten it figured out. And they've done some closings of their own. They've fired some key executives. I think they needed to do something like this to kind of get back on the radar of America's moms. And I think they probably did as much with the advertising platform as you could have expected them to do.
And then another one, JCPenney, they're actually launching a huge marketing campaign, I think starting today. In a lot of their stores, they're rolling out new displays, new advertising, new marketing. They're making a push to come back as well.
Yeah, and interestingly, Penny is one of the few retailers that actually did pretty well during the fourth quarter. I think their same-store sales increase was something like 4%, and that's a key figure for any retailer. And that's a huge turnaround from just a few years ago when they had a CEO come in named Ron Johnson and said, you know what, I think I'm just going to get rid of the traditional penny shopper. We're kind of in a slow growth mode, and I'm just going to appeal to an upscale consumer and completely sack, you know, what Penny has stood for decades. Well, that didn't go very well at all. And so a guy named Myron Ullman, who had been their CEO, came back in, kind of turned the ship around, said we're not going to give up price discounting and some of the other things that had made Penny's bread and butter over the years. And actually, they've done a really good job lately. And while they were not an official Oscar sponsor yesterday for the first time, as you mentioned, they have launched a new marketing campaign. And Penny has to be one of those surprising comeback stories, especially given how difficult retailing in general has been over the last few years.
Definitely. And then LinkedIn, Neutrogena were also on the show last night. We have about a minute left here, but I want to ask you this question. Are we possibly going to see the Oscars telecast become something like the Super Bowl?
Go
ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Super Bowl, and I think that's the key. It's marketers call these tentpole events, and meaning that they're big, they require a lot of money for ads, but the key is they are not DVRable generally. Generally, people watch the Oscars live just like they do the Super Bowl. So advertisers know, hey, if I spend $2 million, which was the price for an Oscars ad, or $5 million, as for the Super Bowl, the chances are people are probably going to watch these ads.
Damn.
They're not just going to blitz through.
But they haven't done.
Well, and the other thing too is there's a party generally. There are people about Oscar parties, like Super Bowl parties.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Dale Buss, thank you for being with us today. By the way, you can read Dale's article on this on the Oscars and the advertisers on brandchannel.com, and we'll link everybody to that article. Dale, it's good to chat with you as always.
All right, thanks, Steve.
On 720 WGN.
It's 5:49 on the market futures today. The Dow Jones futures are off about 51 points this morning. The S&P futures off about 5. Oil also trading lower, now at 32.74. Let's get a look at some of the commodities prices and ag news. And here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we get ready to trade on this last day of February, the February contract of cattle also expires today. It ended the week on Friday down 32 cents. At $137.55, and the April contract down 35 cents at $137. And the cash hog market had a little bit of a setback on Friday because of a weaker cash market. In the grain trade Friday, I think we need to note that the supply that is very heavy pushed soybeans to a 10-week low, meal to a 6-year low. And so we ended the grain market on the downside on Friday. Some of the historians looking back say it's kind of unusual for farmers to increase plantings when prices are down. In 1987, the last time farmers headed to the field after 3 straight years of declines in corn, soybeans, and wheat prices, they cut planting by 7.8%. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a good day.
You too, Orion. 5:50 now on the opening bell. The big box retailer Kohl's has announced in the past week that they're making some changes, including closing some stores. They reported about a 20% drop in profits in the fourth quarter. The Wisconsin-based department store says overall sales last year were flat generally. Kohl's joins JCPenney, Macy's, and Sears in closing stores as people shift, as we've been chatting this morning about, to online buying, that e-commerce, instead of actually going to a brick-and-mortar store. ABC News and WGN reporter Ryan Burrow has been covering the story. Ryan, are we going to see stores like Kohl's go away? Are they going to be making more cuts?
Yeah, they really are. 18 stores closing for Kohl's. They're going to announce which stores those are sometime in March, maybe later end of March. So they are the underperforming stores, said to be no more than 1% of all sales. The good news, by the way, in this story is that the workers at these 18 closing stores or soon to be closed stores will be pushed off to other stores. They're not going to lose their job necessarily. They're just going to kind of be shuffled around. But the same story that we've been hearing with Macy's, with JCPenney, with Sears Kmart is the fact that brick and mortar sales just aren't what they used to be. They're trying to push more to the online sales. And, you know, that they're hoping that kind of cutting away some of the fat will make them a little leaner and meaner.
And the picture is very bleak when you look back to fourth quarter last year. How bad was it for Kohl's?
Yeah, net income down 20% in the fourth quarter, sales down 5%. So it hasn't been good, especially at the brick and mortar stores. But the good news is online sales are up 30%, and that seems to be where everyone's focus is. Let's get people online. Let's try to build out our e-commerce a little bit more, and that's going to be the wave of the future.
Kohl's is one of these retailers, though, that they have a lot of bargains there. People go there to do bargain shopping. You'd think that they'd be doing better at this.
Right? I mean, my wife probably doesn't go there unless she's got that Kohl's cash, you
Absolutely.
Know? That comes in the mail, and after you spend X number of dollars, you get the Kohl's cash. So I don't know if they're going to start scaling back on any of that. I don't know if getting people into the stores is the problem. It just seems to be the sales they're getting and the profits they're making inside the brick and mortar.
And it seems to be a problem, as you said, for all of these retailers. Do you get a sense that, that these stores might all eventually go away someday?
You know, I don't know if we're necessarily going to become an all e-commerce society. I think there is some feeling of, I mean, just look at Black Friday. It's an event, right? You go out there, you get the family together, you go out to the store. You know, a lot of people thought that movie theaters would go down when people started, you know, renting DVDs or getting things on Netflix. And it's still an event. Shopping is, you know, it's kind of a mental thing for a lot of people. But, you know, as far as the numbers go, it shows a lot of more people are saying, hey, why am I going to run out to the store, try to park, try to find what it is I'm looking for, try to find a size that fits me when I can do it all at home and just have it sent to my doorstep.
And that's the last part of that's the biggest complaint among most shoppers is that when they go to the stores, they don't have my size, they don't have this, they don't have that.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't think that as many people are as attached to the brands as they used to be as well. We're seeing, you know, maybe you want to get pants from a different location than your shirts, or maybe you have a certain size that only works with some brands. So, you know, I think people are becoming smarter consumers and less likely to spend their whole weekend out and about on the streets, driving back and forth and finding parking.
WGN's Ryan Burrow with us this morning talking about Kohl's. The other news we want to share, just one final note on our broadcast today. The shares of Weight Watchers plunged almost 30% on Friday. This is after the company reported a surprise $11 million quarterly loss. And at the center of all of this is whether Oprah Winfrey actually hurt or helped the company. And right now, investors and analysts are saying she probably hurt the company to the tune of $27 million. At least the weight management company brought her on as its public face back in October. Shares surged right after she announced she was taking a 10% stake in the company, but then things started going south. Weight Watchers says the number of active subscribers fell 4.8% in the quarter that ended January 2nd, an improvement over the 12.7% decline in the previous quarter. Winfrey is still on about a $30 million profit since October. She's still with Weight Watchers this morning, but as far as that Oprah effect, we talked about this on the opening bell in past broadcasts. We're not sure that that is actually working. As for herself, Oprah says she has lost 26 pounds on Weight Watchers, 26 pounds versus 30% profits. That's the opening bell for this morning. Thanks for being with us. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Our engineer is Ben Cortez this morning. Production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. The Steve Cochran Show is next. Have a great day. It's 5:56.